Well, welcome to the Page 2 podcast presented by Chase Oaks Church, where we go behind the headlines and beyond Sunday morning sermons to discuss in-depth issues of faith, culture, and life. I'm Eric Torrance.
And I'm Greg Holmes.
Greg, today is one of the days that I've been looking to for a long time. I've been nagging you since we decided to do this podcast.
Today it's finally here.
To do a special podcast on Harry Potter, because you and I are both kind of geeks. Maybe, I don't know if I'm a bigger geek or not, but my inner Ravenclaw right now is just like bursting out of my soul.
The fact that you just said inner Ravenclaw means that you're deeper in the nerd forest than I am.
I don't know. I just think you're sounding a little Slytherin to me right now.
So did you like do one of those online tests and that kind of stuff?
Oh, yeah. I did. And I was praying the entire time that I would not come out as a Hufflepuff.
I know. Well, so it seems to me, I've never done one of those tests, but it seems like there's only two. You're either a Ravenclaw or a Gryffindor. Like, that's the only acceptable.
I don't know, unless you're like really in a dark space or you just like want to play with it, you're not going to come out as Slytherin. And then
and
all of the answers,
just,
yeah, it's kind of like, do you like to stay back and prepare safe spaces for people? Then you're like, well, no one's going to say, I mean, it's not going to be there. And you're like, please don't make it a Hufflepuff. And so, yeah, I think you're right. It comes out as one of those two.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Because it is. It's sort of like, do I want to be brave or do I want to be the smart guy up in the tower?
Right, right. Or do you want to be evil or wimpy? And you don't want to be either one of those things.
But, you know, hey, you know, it's just one of those fun things where some of us get a little into it and have the T-shirts and others
of
us.
Some of you do. Yeah.
thank you for that. Well, I know we talked about this, that last year Harry Potter turned 20 years old.
That's crazy.
It made me immediately feel a lot older than I should feel. And
and I'm older than you, so yeah, it did a number on me.
Man, that actually makes me feel a lot better about myself right now, too. Well, when Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, which as our good experts would know, was the original title.
Correct.
Thank you, Ravenclaw. Go with Ravenclaw. When that book was first released, it was 20 years ago, or at least 20 years ago, back in 2018. And so since that time, over 500 million copies in 80 languages have been sold, which breaks down, I saw this as a stat, to about one in every 15 people in the world owning a Harry Potter book.
Oh, my gosh.
Which is nuts.
That is nuts. Yeah.
And so it's an amazing journey. You know, there's lots of stories that have been told about, you know, J.K. Rowling and being a single mom and moving from where she wrote the original manuscript handwritten and sent it out and was rejected by more than a dozen publishers. And from that journey now being turned into the best-selling book series of all time. So it's an incredible journey to think about and what's happened in those 20 years and how J.K. Rowling's bank account has expanded greatly.
And I heard somewhere, and I don't know if this is true or not, that she was, and maybe you've heard this story, that she was like on a train and she had the idea about Harry Potter. And before she got off of the train, she knew how the story would begin and how it would end.
Crazy.
Like, and she had a rough thing of like how each character was going to play, you know, all that kind of stuff. And she knew the overarching sort of meta story of the whole thing in one train ride.
And to go to that point where you're like, I have a million, well, in this case, $1 billion idea, and for it to initially be rejected by so many people is comical now looking back on it, because you're like, it's such a great idea, but it's crazy that that's how the journey went.
Yeah, can you imagine all those publishers that turned her down?
I mean, well, they're probably not in their jobs anymore is what I would think. But it's interesting, too, as we reflected on it and talked about this in preparation for this podcast, that Christians have had an interesting journey with Harry as well. You know, initially, many, if not most Christians, seem to be turned off by the magic or the sorcery or whatever words that they would use and dismiss them. Whether they dismissed them by the magic or not, they also dismissed them as children's novels maybe were dangerous. And it was interesting, I was even thinking about this, that back when I was in elementary school, there was a series that came out. It was the Goosebumps series. Yeah. Are you familiar?
Uh-huh.
I never really read any of them, and my parents always looked down on them, but it was always this sort of, you know, they were horror, and they looked very cheaply written and very just, you know, children's books. And so I think when I even initially thought of Harry Potter, that's what first came to mind was, oh, this is like a young adult, like Goosebumps kind of series that shouldn't be taken all that seriously. But it seems like over time that's changed.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
So one author described how those changes, you know, have been done even in the Christian culture, that it sounds like sometimes when something's in pop culture that starts to take the world by storm, that it becomes, it's interesting how people react to it. I mean, just culture in general, right. That at first you kind of dismiss it, or you even downplay it, or you think that it's just not all that good. And then it kind of moves to where it's like, oh, that's, yeah, it's interesting, but maybe not the best thing, uh-huh. until, oh, yeah, everybody accepts this as being the greatest work of art of all time. And, uh-huh. and with Harry and Christians, and you can disagree with me with this if you want to, but it seemed like when it first came out, the conversation was very much like, is Harry Potter safe for my children? Right. And this is very demonic and mm-hmm. dangerous. And I'm sure there are still people that are good-natured people that may think that way. But right. it seems like the shift has happened over time, where it went to where it was like, you know, it's maybe not demonic. Maybe it's a little bit dangerous. I'm not sure if I'd have my kids read it, to then, you know, sort of like, oh, yeah, it seems like it's okay, to now it's almost like, oh, this is great literature on par with you know, Narnia and Lord right. of the Rings and all that. Yeah. And so it's just fascinating.
It is interesting. Yeah, my family and I were at a concert recently. We went to a Christian concert. It was at a church. And I'm not going to say the band's name, but it was good. I mean, I appreciate this band. And but it was clear in the audience there. It was clear it was kind of a Christian school, a Christian school and Christian homeschool crowd.
Yeah.
And I know that crowd. I mean, it's great. You know, Kelly and I homeschooled our daughters for a few years when they were young, and we know that crowd and, you know, that kind of thing. But as I was looking around, I was like, okay, that's the crowd that's here. And so we're there at this concert, and my youngest daughter is a freshman in high school, and she is wearing her Gryffindor shirt and her
Gryffindor Ravenclaw.
Yeah, she's wearing her Gryffindor shirt and her Deathly Hallows earrings.
Okay.
And just because that's just what she wears. She has all this Harry Potter stuff and, you know, that kind of thing. Well, then after the concert, there's this guy who is clearly hitting on my daughter. You know, which is a whole nother story for like a whole, you know, it's like, hey, dude, come on. You know, and it was clear he was like an upperclassman. He's like, you're older, you're too old for, you know, like that whole thing. But I can overhear the you know, because we're just sort of milling around and all this kind of stuff. And he's trying to make conversation and is noticing, you know, her shirt and her earrings and that kind of stuff. And he asks, so do you think that Harry Potter is the next Lord of the Rings?
Wow.
Which is a fascinating comment.
Yes.
To come from that crowd. Because I don't think, I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think that would have been, that comment would have been made from that crowd.
Right.
20 years ago.
Right.
Or even 18 years ago or whatever, you know, when the books were first starting, that something has changed within the Christian community that has brought about a different type of conversation about these books. Which is just really, really interesting.
Because it's interesting, like if we were to do a podcast on this 20 years ago or even 15 years ago, it would probably be much more on the, all right, let's explain the magic and how do you deal with that and right. all these themes. To now, it was interesting after, I think it was after Deathly Hallows came out, that Rowling herself had to basically defend the overtly Christian themes and actually kind of push back and say, hey, yeah, there's Christian themes in this. These weren't meant to be allegorical or, you know, purely Christian, you know, books about Jesus. But it was interesting that it had shifted that far to where it was no longer, is this demonic? It's actually you have non-Christian people that are looking at these and saying, are you trying to push through a Christian message on this underneath our eyes? Which just fascinates
me. Yeah, right. And we'll talk about some of that, especially when you get to the Deathly Hallows, it gets pretty... Yeah, it's pretty profound.
So it's interesting because of the my journey with Harry was it started in college more than anything, because I kind of initially dismissed them and I like reading. I grew up on the Narnia books. I grew up on the Lord of the Rings story. I love that kind of fiction, and yet I dismissed them as children's books more than anything else.
Right.
And so I didn't even start engaging with the books until that first movie came out. And I saw the movie, and it's still kind of a children's movie for the first one.
Remind me, when the first movie came out, where were the books? Do you remember?
I think they were on book three by that point was when they had released it. Okay. I might be wrong on that, but it felt like Azkaban had come out and that they were – she was firmly entrenched in the culture, and that they were a phenomenon that then Warner Brothers had picked up. And so I saw the movie and I was like, oh, this is good. I mean, it was better than I expected. I went because a bunch of friends were going to the movie. And so it wasn't until even a few years later where I had graduated. I was actually in seminary, you know, graduate school for pastors, and I was wanting to take a break from the normal seminary read. I was like, I'm going to sit down and start catching up on Harry Potter, and fell in love with the books. But it was an initial, lots of walls were up. And I remember when I was telling friends that, oh, I'm reading Harry Potter, that a lot of them, since they knew I was in seminary and I was thinking about being a pastor, they did at that time ask me a bunch of questions like, well, isn't that sorcery? And aren't you really worried about the wizardry and the witchcraft and all that? And are you supporting all that? And I was like, oh, it was fascinating at that point to get that reaction then.
Yeah. You know, my story, sort of history with this. So these, you know, the books came out 20 years ago. My oldest daughter is 22 and my middle daughter is 20. And so when these came out, I had just graduated seminary. And I had a 2-year-old and a newborn. And so these weren't really on my radar.
Right.
You know, a book about a young wizard or whatever. It's like, that is, you know, I didn't really know anything about them at all until, I don't know, the second or third book was out, you know. And so it was a few years. And then it was, I sort of found out about them because I was a student ministries pastor.
Yeah.
And so I had middle school students who loved Harry Potter. And I just thought it was weird. And I've got I criticized it. And I, you know, and that's something that actually that I have seen in my life looking back that I do think as I'm getting older, I'm getting better at. But I have seen in me a tendency that I have seen also among a lot of Christians where there is a tendency to jump to criticism, to being a critic before being a student.
Yeah.
And sort of criticizing things that you don't understand.
Yes.
And just sort of going directly there rather than just sort of being open-handed and saying, well, let's just sort of figure this out. And so it's just too easy to sort of jump on a bandwagon and, you know. And so for us or for me, I had friends and other family, like my sister-in-law and, you know, stuff like that who just loved Harry Potter, who essentially told me, Greg, you got to lighten up. You know what I mean? They're fun stories. Just read them.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're fun stories. And when I read them, one, they are fun stories.
Yes.
And they're very accessible. They're easy to read. They're accessible, fun stories. But far from, like, pointing children on, you know, towards evil, they really point them towards love and courage and friendship and fidelity and like all of these types of things within the context of a fantasy realm. You know what I mean? And so it was like, yeah, I do need to lighten up. And then so by the time, you know, the later books were coming out, we were a full-fledged Harry Potter family.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my girls were dressing up for the book releases and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And I kept, you know, threatening I was going to get a long blonde wig to be Lucius Malfoy, which I could totally pull off.
See, Slytherin the whole time. No, got it. No. I know it's there.
I could
see it.
I could pull off a Lucius Malfoy. So, and then by the time, you know, you mentioned, by the time you read Deathly Hallows, I mean, and you see some of those themes pull out, you know, and then you feel a little bit sheepish about your, you know, concerns, you know, earlier.
Yeah, it is interesting of stories like this that do take off the ability for kids to be wrestling with topics that we'll talk about in a second that are hard hitting, like death and love and loyalty and sacrifice. And you're like, you can't preach a sermon that would be that long that a kid would listen to, let alone an adult. And the fact that she's getting people to read 400 page books on these topics is fascinating, where they're like scrambling to, you know, get the latest copy. And you're like, have you seen how heavy? I mean, by the time I started reading Harry Potter, you know, obviously the first one's not super dense, but it's like you get to Goblet of Fire. You're like, that'll prop open my door. And the
For
fact
sure.
that people want to read this and the kind of topics that she is talking about, you're like, man, that is fascinating that she was able to pull that off to where people would actually want to engage with that as opposed to the half hour sitcom or, you know, the easy articles or magazines or whatever it is. And so for me, my journey with it was even just being fascinated that she was able to do something that I think any of us that create content would want to do, which is to capture the imagination of people and actually have in-depth conversations that you don't typically have.
Yeah,
and what she covers, she does.
You know, one of the reasons why she was rejected.
Yes. It's like kids don't want to talk about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but she gave younger readers a lot more credit.
Yes.
You know, that we can talk about some important things and we can champion some things that are worthy of being championed and we can do it in a creative way. And it doesn't have to be under 100 pages.
Yes.
You know, this is going to be a 400-page book that's going to capture, you know, imagination. And yeah,
it's why when I think about, like, and my kids are way too young to read, let alone read Harry Potter.
Right.
But it made me think, like, okay, yeah, there's obviously some pretty deep issues that are in there, but the fact that a child would want to engage, or a student would want to engage with those type of things would be really encouraging to me, just from the conversations that would come out. And I'm sure you've had great conversations with your kids as a result of Harry Potter. So why have a podcast with us about this or with this? I mean, as we talked about, this is not a podcast where we're going to, you know, talk about magic and whether or not there should be, you know, kind of anti-Harry Potter or should we be for Harry Potter. We're kind of unapologetically about that. And again, if you're not a fan of Harry Potter, there's no shame in any of that. We totally get it. There's some valid perspectives on it. But from Grady and I's perspective, we love digging into art like this to kind of find deeper themes.
And I think, you know, and Eric, you and I have talked about, you know, in me being an artist and you being a arts appreciator and reader and all of the
and my pencil drawings, my stick figure drawings that are really profound.
We've talked about each season to have something that's arts related. And this is a great place for us to start because this becomes a little bit of an example of how do we take sort of an artistic artifact or something that was created for culture and cultural consumption and then just sort of talk about it, you know, and see what's the value in it and, you know, that kind of thing. And so this is a great place to start.
And, you know, we want to have a little fun.
That's
right.
Yeah.
Both of us, I mean, man, we are Mr. Fun people, aren't we? Yeah. I mean, that's not, well, truthfully, that's not the label that we sometimes carry around.
We've had some heavy topics in this season. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think we've both been looking forward to this.
So I think what's cool, one, is to have a little bit of fun with this podcast and dive in and kind of geek out in whatever Ravenclaw manner you want to or not. But I think the other thing, too, is just that I think stories like this can help us think profoundly about faith. And I get a big kick out of that, that something that helps me connect with a movie or a story or reading a book is when there are some deeper themes that just connect with me at a level beyond just what I'm reading on the page. And I think this is a chance for us to think about how stories can do that.
Yeah. You know, I think for me, you know, I think that just about every story that connects with us at a deep level, or maybe stories that have sort of strong cultural staying power, do so because they hit on something that is deep and profound at a human level, or they hit on something that is that we really want to be true of our own personal lives. So it's either, you know, it hits on sort of a big human theme or it hits on something that's very personal for us. Hmm. And most stories, you and I have talked a lot about this, but most stories are a variation of the same hero narrative over and over and over again. And the reason, and there's a lot that's been written on that. There's a lot of study that's been done on that. The reason that's true is that we love to be told that story again and again and again, that there's something profoundly true about it. Mm. And that we long for it to be true, like that type of thing. And so that's a reason, like, and once you know that sort of basic plot line, you see it again and again in so many movies, you see marketers use it, you know, all of that type of thing. And it starts with a flawed hero who either wants something really, really strongly, or is called to do something that is beyond their ability, or is put into a seemingly impossible situation. Hmm. So it's a flawed hero that has to do something that's a little bit beyond them. And they feel unsure about their abilities to do so. And once you think of that, I mean, you think of Luke Skywalker at the beginning of, you know, of Star Wars, or it's Katniss Everdeen, or it's Frodo Baggins, or it's, you know, it's like, it's the same story again and again and again and again.
I feel so cheated.
Well, we love that story and usually that, sort of unease or that self-doubt that's established within the first few minutes.
Yeah.
Of the story, because that's where the story begins. And then the reason we love those stories is because it taps into something deep at the core of who we are, that we identify with those heroes because we know that we're flawed, but we also believe that we're called to something bigger than ourselves, or we're put into a situation that's a little bit beyond us. And so that's why we identify with that hero. And so, it speaks to something that is very true of the human experience. But one of the things that I really, you know, and at a basic level, it's clear if you've read the Harry Potter books, Rowling follows that model every single book.
Right.
You know, every book does that. It's a retelling of that same story. The kids are a little bit older. It gets a little bit darker. There's a lot more at stake, you know, as each book, but it's essentially the same story. But one of the things that I love that Rowling does, and this is a thread, and we're going to talk about themes and threads and all that kind of stuff, but one of the things that really pops up for me is that she not only tells this story, but she does it in a Tolkien type way, because it's not just about the hero overcoming the odds and doing something, because Harry Potter is way beyond his depth, and he would be lost without his friends.
Yeah.
And that is a key component. And you see that in the Fellowship of the Ring that Tolkien does as well, that Frodo Baggins is not the most equipped to do that.
Right.
And so he is completely dependent upon community around him. And that community and friendship thing is just as important as the hero narrative. You know what I mean? That
right.
There are things that I'm called to do. Well, that I might be called to live a heroic life or to do, you know, God might be calling something, but you have something in you that I need that I can't do unless you are in my life as my friend.
Yeah.
Or the other friends that I have, unless they are active and involved in my life, that sense of community is crucial for me to do what I'm called to do. And that is a particular like Christian message, which I find just sort of fascinating. And it does fly in the face of sort of rugged Western individualism.
Yeah.
You know, this is not a
lone ranger.
It's not a lone ranger at all. You know, it is a hero journey, but it is one that's done in community.
Yeah.
Which I just find fascinating.
And I love the flawed hero idea too, that Harry is a very flawed hero, which we'll get into. And I think the idea then that, you know, the idea, and you've talked about this before too, of like there's a guide that helps that hero get to where they want to go. And you see that time and time again, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi or, you know, what's the name of it in the guy for Katniss, Woody Harrelson
plays him.
That's all I remember is Woody Harrelson plays him. But it's like you need that guide to help you get to where you want to go. And Harry has a lot of guides that fill that space. So. No, I just think I mentioned that I felt cheated in a sense, because I think in some ways when you peel back the layers of these stories, it's almost like, well, it's the same story. And yet, obviously, there's intricacies in each time. But I think on the one hand, we could feel cheated, like, okay, is that really, like, even Rowling, each book follows that hero narrative, but she even uses very similar structure for most of the books, barring probably Deathly Hallows. So you could feel cheated, but you could also say there is something about that structure, about story, that connects with us in our human heart in a pretty unique way. Yeah. And even I think the way that God wired us.
Right. It's true.
About things. Yeah.
It's, you know, and it's either true of us or it's something that we deeply want to be true. You know, it is something that touches us at a deep level.
So after a quick break, we're going to really geek out about Harry. We're just going to talk about some of those big themes that we see that connect us to God's big story and favorite characters and why they resonate with us. And I just want to encourage you, if you're a big Harry Potter fan, you're probably going to get a lot out of that, and hopefully it'd be fun and we don't mess it up too much. And I'm sure if we do, the comment boards will be ringing it up. It's like, how dare you? If you're not a big Harry Potter fan, I'd still encourage you to listen, because I think there are things that we'll be hitting on that touch about stories in general that maybe you can look for in some of your favorite movies or books that maybe help you say, okay, there is something true about this that and there is a reason why I like that. So after a quick break, we're going to dive into all of that. I hope you join us. Well, we're back, and one of the resources, Greg, that you and I have both appreciated is a book that's called How Harry Cast His Spell. It's by an author named John Granger. It was originally released earlier as Finding God in Harry Potter, and we'll put a link on our webpage because if you love Harry, it's a worthwhile read. I actually think he goes maybe a few steps further than I would probably go with finding connections with God. But, man, if you want to go take a deep dive in this, that would be a great place to start, because I think it'll connect things in there. But one of the things he mentions that I appreciate is his test of whether a book is a classic or not. And he asks, does the book address the big questions of human life Does the artistry of the work support the answers given to those questions? And are the answers about edifying relationships with God, people, and the world? And to these, and I would agree with him, he would say that the answer is a resounding yes for Harry Potter, that Rowling does get into details about the big questions of life, like how we treat other people, dignity, identity, death, growth, friendships, good and evil, you know, all the stuff that a good children's novel would have.
Right.
It's pretty dark again as you keep going through it. So, Greg, I'm going to give you first crack at this, you know, from an overarching view of Harry Potter. What is a big question or theme that you see Rowling dive into that is just really compelling to you through Harry?
Yeah. And well, and actually, before I sort of jump in, I have several examples, but I've been thinking about something you said right before the break about how, you know, people listening to this, they might be for or against, they might be for or against for a variety of reasons. And
right.
Where I think that those, and I'm glad that you said, and those reasons might be valid, and we don't want someone to change their convictions or, you know, that kind of stuff. But kind of where I am coming from on this is some of the things that you just mentioned about dignity and identity and love, like those types of things. There are truths, whether and wherever they show up, in whatever type of book or whatever type of music or whatever type of movie, you know, those types of things, that all truth is God's truth. And so I think that sometimes Christians can feel like, well, is it Christian or not? You know, like in quotations.
Slap the label on it.
Yeah, slap the label. And then Christian becomes sort of a genre. It's like it's Christian if there's certain verses or if there's a prayer at the end or if there's a gospel priest, you know, like those types of things, like Christian media or Christian movie, or which clearly Harry Potter isn't.
Yes.
It's not a Christian movie.
That was not her goal.
It was not her goal. It's not her. It's not what she ended up with, you know, that kind of stuff. And so we are not trying to make the case that it's a Christian series.
Exactly.
What we are trying to say is that there are themes that have been beneficial, that we have found moving, and those themes are true. Whether the book, you know, veers in weird places or whatever, you know, is a different conversation. You know what I mean? It doesn't sort of stay on the Christian side of the line
right. The
whole time. But it is to say, okay, let's not freak out over certain things. Are there examples where we can say, okay, all truth is God's truth. Where is the truth that God has taught us about humanity and dignity and good and evil and courage and in those types of things? How is that showing up in a way that is true in this? Does that make sense?
It does. And what I was even going to pop in with too is that, you know, if you're waiting for us to reveal who Jesus is in any of these characters, the answer would be, well, Jesus shows up a bit as far as the qualities of who Christ is and what he did for us. But there is no one character that is the Jesus figure, like throughout the entire series. And for us to say that would be wrong. So instead, I think it's to say that we see elements of what makes Jesus so attractive to us, why I think we're drawn to him in different characters at different times. And so that's where we want to point out some of those things. So it's not to say, it's not like your point with Narnia, where you're like, well, Aslan is the Christ figure, the God figure, that there is no easy connection here, but that does not mean that there are not Christian truths that are in here.
And so when you ask, like, so what are the first things that sort of pop into my head?
Yeah.
One of the ones that pops into my head is the whole theme that love is more powerful than hate. And that's pretty profound, and it starts the books. It ends at the very end. You know, that's what saves Harry Potter from death at the very as a baby. It's what defeats evil at the end. And I think one of the profound things that Rowling, one of the profound statements that she makes is that, because like at first read, it'd be easy to see, well, it's a children's book. It's about love, or, you know, that kind of stuff. She's not saying that love is preferable to hate or to evil, or that love is just sort of better. She's saying that it's actually more powerful, which is a different statement, you know, and that is something, I mean, you get into, that gets pretty profound. And you start talking about, like, that's some of the foundation of the civil rights movement and some of that, you know, like there have been some leaders who have changed the world who have said, that they've changed the world because they fully believe that love is stronger than hate, Jesus being one of them.
Yeah.
And so I think that's pretty profound. And so, and that's a distinctly Christian message, although, you know, you might not know it by watching social media accounts of certain Christian leaders, you know, talking about social issues. And but that's another topic for another day,
right.
You know. But I think that when you read the Gospels and that message of, like, it's not just sort of, you know, love and hate, good versus evil. They're not just sort of yin and yang of, like, that love is actually more powerful.
Yes.
And that when given, when we give ourselves over to that, it wins.
Yes.
And that's pretty profound.
Like, I mean, Dumbledore would say this a number of times in the books where he's like, there is something that one of the problems that Voldemort has is that he never got the fact that there was something worse than death, you know, because throughout the books, he's trying to defeat death or become the master of death or anything like that. And when you look at the noble characters in the book, they all work. I mean, whether they would say with an eternal perspective or not, they work with this idea that there is something worse than death, that a life without love is worse and that love is more powerful than any of those other things too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how about you?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say you kind of hit on the idea of friendship and community. And I would say that the relationship between the three main protagonists of Ron and Hermione and Harry is a theme of friendship and also flawed, that by yourself you do not have enough or you cannot make it work all on your own, you know, and that you need each other. And so I think one of the themes of the inadequacy of the self by yourself, it connects throughout all of the books, that Harry has a refining journey that he goes through in every single book, and that the role of Hermione and Ron in particular play a unique part in that transformation that Harry experiences. And I think at the beginning of each book, you can almost see the transformation take place in Harry's life, whether it's kind of an external realization that he has, like in, you know, the first book, where it's like he goes from thinking of himself as a nobody to the transformation of seeing himself in this grander scheme. Mm-hmm. Or you can see it in more of internal transformation that happens where I think, is it Azkaban, where he goes from blowing up his aunt at the beginning of the book, he turns his aunt into like a balloon or something with rage and anger. And by the end of it, is transformed into, you know, where he shows mercy and doesn't show retribution. And that the role that his friends play in that journey is pretty profound, because obviously it's like in our life, it's the same thing, that, you know, as iron sharpens iron, we need other people for us to do that.
That's great.
Greg, what about evil and good and all of that? Like, what do you...
Yeah, well, you know, I think... And you mentioned by the time you get to Deathly Hallows, there were a lot of people, Christian and non, that were saying, "Hey, wait a minute! It seems like we've heard this story before." You know, because if you're listening and you're not familiar with the Harry Potter thing, if you said, "Oh, that's just a," you know, and you. If you've been under a rock, you know, so I'm going to give some stuff away.
Do we really have to do spoiler alerts at this part of the
hopefully
thing?
Hopefully not, you know? Yeah.
Turn down your radio.
You deserve it by now if you haven't. But, you know, clearly, you know, Harry, you know, from book to book, he's the hero that we identify with. But he also plays a dual role from the beginning to the end. He is kind of a Christ figure.
Yes.
And you mentioned, like, there's different characters do have different aspects of that or whatever. Yeah. But in a pretty profound way, as a carrier of a Horcrux, he is a carrier of an evil that is alien to him.
Yes.
And the only way to defeat it once and for all is through self-sacrifice.
Yeah.
And so he takes evil to death, and then he comes back without it in resurrection.
Yes.
And it's like, I've heard that story before, you know, I mean, it's pretty clear, you know, and then even the fact that the conversation between Harry and Dumbledore in that sort of between death and resurrection happens at King's Cross, is not so subtle, you know?
And there's a resurrection stone that he holds right before it. Yeah.
Yeah. All of that. But, you know, I think that rather than me saying, well, that shows up, like, you and I have talked about this in the past, that, you know, I don't believe things are true because they're in the Bible. I believe they're in the Bible because they're true. That is a theme that defeat through self-sacrifice, that love conquering evil, like those types of things, they're in the Bible because they're true.
Yes.
Like that is the universe that God created.
Yes.
And so it's I don't necessarily think that Rowling is like picking up on biblical themes. I think she's just picking up on something that seems profoundly true to us, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. I would say that as I've reread them lately too, it's like because she went to church. I want to say she's a United Methodist. I might be wrong on that.
I think she might be Anglican, but I could be, so maybe I'm wrong.
So both of us are now speaking about things that we have no idea about. And again, you can comment on our page of which one of us was right, and then you'll revoke my Ravenclaw status if I fail a test on that. But
that's funny.
But she did grow up with these stories, with the narrative of Christianity and Jesus. And I do think, I don't think she just stumbles upon them. I think she is trying to, you know, relay some of those truths in the stories. And I think too that just the idea of a lot of literature that we love, and not just the stories, but in the hero journey, but a lot of literature and English literature is based on kind of a Christian narrative a lot of times. And so I see with Harry, it's like, well, yeah, in the first book, it's like Harry, in almost every book, every book, Harry has a near-death experience in there.
Right.
And I think it's even in the first one where he's like in a coma for 3 days, you know, and then comes out of it after he had, you know, defeated evil in a self-sacrificial way because, you know, he didn't lust after power himself, but he, you know, and all that. And so I think when you see the 3 days and King's Cross and the resurrection stone and partly because I do love the movies in Deathly Hallows, part two in the movie, just that image of Voldemort that is, you know, the crippled Voldemort that's in King's Cross, that's that child that's writhing underneath it was such a profoundly moving visual for me about sin, you know, and the defeat of sin nature and what it took for that to happen.
Yeah,
that I can't help but think that it's not just simply like, oops, I don't know how that happened. I think there is a part where she is picking up on parts of that story that have resonated with her.
And it's possible, and I've obviously never talked to her, and you know, that kind of stuff.
I talk to her all the time.
Well, okay,
she's delightful.
You're more special than me.
Thank you. Yeah.
But it's possible that as she writes something that feels true to her, that some of her background is just sort of coming through subconsciously.
Yes.
Like she's either doing this consciously or subconsciously. Yeah. We don't know.
I think too, and this is why I think you're right that Harry often acts as the Jesus figure, but I think there's other times where Harry acts as the everyman, as sort of you and me in our journey. And I picked up on that in Deathly Hallows as well. Because we did a podcast earlier this season on doubt, you know?
Yeah.
And so that one's fascinating to me, the especially the beginning of Deathly Hallows, where Harry had, you know, seen the death of his mentor and beloved. He's a Dumbledore man through and through. And then at the beginning, he goes through a journey of doubt based on his faith in Dumbledore, just as a, you know, what does he believe about Dumbledore? And that faith has been shattered or cracked or in some way. And so the journey of faith that Harry goes through in that story of where he eventually gets to a place where he's like, I'm not going to know everything about Dumbledore. I wish I knew more about him. And I think it was after Dobby's death that he, spoiler alert, that he just makes up his mind that I'm going to believe that Dumbledore had the best interests at heart. And that just resonates with me because of that doubt conversation that you and I had about, hey, that's a journey that, and I could imagine that's a journey that Rowling herself has had with faith too. I mean, I'd love to talk with her about, hey, your experience with faith, and she went through a really tough life.
Right.
That with all the different things and the confusion that she had and not knowing the whole plan, but to go through a journey, and then at least through Harry, we see how he comes out afterwards with his faith intact or restored. That's incredibly inspiring to me.
Yeah.
And I liked that.
That's great. You know? Okay, so my question for you now, next question is, all right, favorite character.
Okay. This one I had to think about a little bit. I actually would say Neville is my favorite character.
Yeah.
And the reason why, I mean, he's kind of a doofus, so I sort of resonate with that. But I think he reminded me of, like, when I was in school, especially in grade school and high school, I was not the gifted kid. Like, people weren't looking at me as the all-star on, you know, on any sport team or something. And so I think the reason why I like him is the evolution of that character. You know, you could see a part where she could have just had him as sort of the doofus comedic relief. And Dobby kind of fits in that too. Mm-hmm. But the comedic relief side. But then the fact that he actually starts to play a pretty profound role in the story, and even that there was a unique destiny, unique suffering that he had to go through to the point at the end of Deathly Hallows where he's a pretty impactful character. I have a really special spot in my heart for Neville.
Yeah, that's great.
What about you?
You know, I think for me, when I think about like the most profound character story in here, I think is Dobby for me.
Okay.
Because when you think about Dobby being someone who was enslaved as a house elf, who was then given, who was shown love and dignity and given freedom, and then to see sort of that transformation to where he becomes courageous and bold for a cause that's bigger than himself, and he, you know, begins to think for himself and act according to his convictions, and then he freely commits to serving the one who loved him and granted dignity upon him, and then ultimately he freely lays down his life for the sake of the one who set him free.
Wow.
Is a pretty profound story, you know, that he does not use the freedom that he was given for his own sake, like that freedom was so profound that he then used it in service to the one who set him free.
Wow.
And that's a meaningful story.
And it's fascinating with him again, where he was kind of the same way, where when he showed up in book two, it's like he's the annoying kind of, you know, comic relief. Mm-hmm. And then the fact that there was a freedom story there. And it's really interesting, like even the dignity theme that we had hit on, that you can tell Rowling has in her heart a profound care for how people that are maybe, you know, maligned or I mean, racism is a pretty big theme throughout Harry Potter, of either races that are, you know, obviously the pure blood versus mud blood kind of thing, which evokes Nazi Germany, you know, theming to it. But also you have the magical creatures that are sort of sometimes treated as half human or less than human.
Right.
That there, it was fascinating how she took Dobby and turned him from a bit character to a profound journey of faith.
Hero.
You know, hero.
Right. Yeah. That's great.
Well, I mean, Greg, obviously we could go on and on about this. There's seven books, and as we've mentioned, they're quite long, and there's a lot of places that you could dive in and get extra theming and all of that. And so I just am grateful for the chance to kind of have some fun with it.
Yeah.
And maybe some people that you're listening, you're like, you know, one, you may be like, man, there's something big that you guys missed. I would invite you, comment on our Facebook page or send us something and share with us maybe something that that has impacted you from the stories. And again, you mentioned this earlier, this isn't meant to be a, you know, be a good Christian. You need to like Harry Potter, read Harry Potter. I have friends that would span the spectrum of care for this topic. One would, from loving it to some people being like, you know what, I've actually made a pretty conscious choice to not engage with it. And I totally respect that.
Sure.
But I would say if you're kind of in the middle where you're like, you know what, I might be open, or I never have, I would just say, hey, maybe this would help you. I'd consider you maybe give it another shot or take another look. You know?
Yeah, because it's possible that maybe you just saw the movies and didn't read the books, you know, or you read the books and didn't see, you know, like you're listening to Eric and I talk about all of these profound themes. It's like, I didn't get any of that, you know, when I was reading. And that's cool. But it's possible that, I mean, there's some cool stuff there.
Or maybe it's possible they're just a Hufflepuff. Okay.
Yeah, maybe so.
Oh, man.
But it's been fun for us.
Well, that concludes this episode of the Page 2 Podcast. And as always, we would love to hear from you. And you can comment on our website, which is page2podcast.com. Or again, you can like us on Facebook or comment in any one of those things. We would love to interact with you because, again, there's no one-size-fits-all opinion about this. Or if there's another book that has been really impactful, or story that's been impactful for you that you see a lot of theming on, like, share it, because I would love to love to read it.
For sure.
Well, as always, we want to thank you for joining with us, and we have a few shout outs that we just want to give to the Center for Church Renewal for letting us graciously use their microphones For David Powers, our technical expert, and Reflect, who gives us the sweet beats that track along with us each time. We just want to say a special thanks to them, and thanks to you for joining it with us, and we'll talk with you soon.